This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Now this hour on Coast to Coast, John Lear will be joined with Richard C. Hoagland. We'll talk about some of these structures on the moon and more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. John, tell us a little bit more about Richard Hoagland's Moon-Mars connection that helped get you interested in some of the moon work.
It was fascinating, but just let me slip this in here. Ron Schmidt, who has helped me with all this and done tremendous research over the past 2 months, has a website, thelivingmoon.com and landoflegends.us. That's thelivingmoon.com and landoflegends.us. And just a quick shout to Hank McCoy and my daughters Allie and Jax and their friends Trish and Matt. Now, when I saw that Moon-Mars connection of Richard Hoagland, it was absolutely fascinating. And so I started researching all the stuff that that he had shown in that. And that's what led me to all of this research I've done. I mean, Richard is a fantastic guy. I've talked to him many times on the phone. He showed me some pictures. He had one hidden. Not hidden, but he didn't name it, and it was on his website. And since the name wasn't there, I didn't want to say, hey, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, and make a jerk so out of myself. So I waited a couple of days, maybe a week or so, and then I finally sent it to him. I said, what's that? He says, he emails back, and he says, you like? And I said, Richard, I'm going to wring your neck unless you tell me what that is. And it was a structure rising out of Trisneckers, about 60 miles high. It was fantastic. Anyway, Richard is a great guy.
Well, I'm going to invite everybody in now to listen to this conversation between you, John, and Richard Hoagland as you talk about this issue of Moon Mars. And so come on in, everybody, along with Richard C. Hoagland, the head of the EnterpriseMission.com. Hi, Richard. How are you?
Our national campfire, George.
Absolutely. It is. Look, Richard, I'm going to do this a little differently this time. I'm going to I'll interject every once in a while, as I always do, but I kind of want a conversation between you and John. I mean, both of you have come up with just some startling revelations of issues on the moon. Rich, I want you to talk to him about what you showed me at Joshua Tree, that incredible robotic head. But go ahead, just chat. Have some fun.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me acknowledge someone who's really important on our team. You met him at Joshua Tree, Steve Troy.
Yes, I did.
Who has done some incredible work going back about 10 years. I believe, John, part of your photographic montage that you sent over to Lex was the crater Kepler.
Yeah, and that's Steve Troy's picture.
Exactly, and that's the area you call the city. Steve has been over that with literally a microscope and was showing me that like 8-9 years ago, and we were finding things in some of the lunar orbiter stuff that actually to this day has not been published. He's actually going to have a three-dimensional computer modeling of some of that now crafted by some of our VTR friends. And he has done such amazing work. As I was saying earlier tonight, you know, George, you don't believe in coincidence.
No.
Tonight I did 2 hours with our old friend David Livingston on the space show,
mm-hmm.
which is the show that he has that kind of has co-opted all of the alternate space people, the engineers and the NASA people and the disenfranchised contractor people, all the people that can't understand what Griffin is really up to, because nothing about the new moon initiative really makes engineering sense, and we might get into that in a little while. Anyway, I did 2 hours with him, basically no holds barred, the gloves came off, and I talked about all the bizarre things that I'm going to be showing in Los Angeles at the Expo in a couple, 3 weeks. You think you have seen something, George, amazing? Wait till you see what I'm going to show you next, my friend.
All right. All right.
Now, John, I'm hoping you can get over to L.A. for this. This is the first weekend in February 9th through the 13th.
Okay, I'll make it a point.
At the L.A. Hilton.
Okay.
Because I got to tell everybody, you know, everybody in America in this extraordinary audience, John is one of the few people that I both immensely agree with and immensely disagree with at the same time.
How so?
Well, John is a pilot, all right? I'm a physicist. My background is astrophysics. John is a very savvy layman in this area, listening to certain sources. And he's got the right ballpark. You know, he's in the right solar system. But some of the specific interpretations of the imagery that he has presented, from my analysis and my colleagues, is not exactly on point. But that really doesn't matter, because if you're in the same solar system on this, it's a home run. There are structures on the moon. There are artificial structures on the moon. Some of them are old, incredibly old. Some of them are new. I don't know how new. I don't know whether we're mining for minerals. Minerals is kind of passé when you get to this level of exploitation of celestial objects. Frankly, John, I think we're mining for the retro-engineering of the ancient technologies that are deep under the visible and battered lunar surface. Can you imagine what it would be worth to find a working device that could produce free energy? Forget helium-3. That could tap into the zero point directly, bring it back to Earth, figure out how it worked, and then have independent free power forever and lock it up, have the sole ownership of that technology. I mean, there's lots to mine on the moon. I don't think it's minerals. I think it's technology and the ancient science of those who came before.
And we're looking for it with a bucket wheel excavator that's 100 feet high.
Well, yeah, because on this show a few weeks ago, remember, George, I made a big deal about the so-called Ina Formation?
Mm-hmm.
This is a formation, John, that was made a big deal of by a couple of guys at Harvard a few weeks ago with a paper in Nature. There's an area kind of like in the dead center of the moon, just above the center of the moon, about 3-4 miles across, looks like a kind of a horseshoe, called the Ina Formation, I-N-A. It is supposedly the youngest, cleanest, sharpest, smoothest area on the entire moon, as judged by the orbiter and Clementine and other photography. It also is brilliantly visible in titanium bands, meaning it has a lot of titanium on the surface. In fact, it's the most titanium they found of any spot on the moon. It looks to me, again, coming at it from a different perspective, as an excavation. And what really cinches it, as I said on Coast, is that it's at 19.5. It's 19 degrees north, 5 degrees west. So somebody excavated a 3 or 4 mile area, like a super archaeological expedition, to show us dumb Earth guys when we got back to the moon, if that model is correct, if we were there before and we're going back now, where to look, because all the surface stuff is really beaten to hell in a handbasket. If you want to find pristine things, things that still work, things that you can learn from, if you want to find the libraries, you've got to dig below the surface. And it looks to me, and I'm going to lay out the evidence for people coming to the expo in L.A., that somebody did us an incredible favor at this code latitude and longitude of 19.5, so we would go there and look at what's there, and that's one of the areas that I want the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter in 2008 to target. Because, George, it will have almost the same resolution for the moon as we have with MRO of Mars, which is inches across.
What's fascinating, though, is you and John, regardless of what's going on there, agree that something is happening on the moon.
Well, I agree something happened. I'm much, much, much less certain, because I don't see it in our data that something is happening. The only place where I've seen structures, and I use that term in quotes, which look pretty new, like they're really, really kind of
ongoing,
brand new,
yeah,
would be on ramparts, John, in Tycho. When you look at Tycho, at some of the lunar orbiter pictures, you see this huge 60-mile-wide impact crater, and then you see around the edges on the inside what they call abatements, which are flat areas that look like lava had pooled after the heat of the impact. On some of those, there are absolutely incredible, regular geometric structures that do not look as if they have been shattered and bashed by meteors exposed for millions and millions of years. They look very, very, very new. Now, the problem that I have with the whole new idea is that on the moon, because there's no, and this is going to get John really intrigued, no atmosphere. We'll come back to that, right, John?
Yeah, there's a breathable atmosphere,
okay.
I agree.
This is where John and I really, really disagree, all right? But let's hold that for just a second.
Well, you're in good company because Bob Lazar doesn't believe it, and Ignorant Ape doesn't believe it. So you have good company.
Well, but I've got evidence, and we'll go through the evidence for the audience, because in other words, what everyone needs to know is that John and I are not just picking this out of, strange parts of our anatomy. We have data, and we're looking at this data through certain sets of eyes, our background, our expertise. You know, I haven't flown an L-1011 lately, but... You know, he hasn't looked through a really...
I think I'd rather fly with John than you, Richard.
I think so, too. Okay. My point is that we all bring our individual expertise, and the truth is somewhere kind of in the middle.
Sure.
And that's the way real science works. You know, you can have wonderful disagreements and respect people, but not agree with their interpretation of specific pieces of data. In general, John and I are in incredible agreement up to and including the idea of a secret space program. Let me get back to that in a minute, but let me finish this one point, which is if you look at these structures in Tycho, they're so crisp, just like the Ina structures, which, by the way, are buried several hundred feet below the lunar surface. That is a depression, which you can see easily on the Apollo imagery. There's a huge excavated, it looks like an ancient archaeological excavation in the Middle East. Somebody took away all the overburden, all the regolith, all the lunar dirt and soil and rock, and exposed what was lying there underneath, which is crisp buildings, exquisite crisp buildings. And Steve was able, through NASA, through some of our friends, to get actual very high generation negatives where we made prints at a special lab that we use. We then scanned them, applied enhancement techniques, and I'm going to show you incredible human-scale buildings that are crisp, not battered and bashed and broken, but crisp in the Ina formation. And we see the same kind of new stuff in Tycho. But the problem, again, as I come back to, is how new is new? Because on the moon, things will look new for 1,000 years, 10,000 years, 500,000 years. So then I think we might be, and again, I'm open to other suggestions, but I think in terms of the new stuff, we might be looking at stuff from the last cycle, George, the high civilization you talk about,
yes,
the so-called Atlantean era, which would be 13,000 years ago, the last time this planet went boing, like it might do again coming up on this, Mayan calendar date of 2012. We're at the end of that 12,000-plus-year cycle, and that's why I'm concerned about the whole 2012 thing. Let's go back to the moon atmosphere. The key reason
keep your train of thought here. You're talking about 13,000 years ago. Who's mining Copernicus? Those pictures I have. There's cranes. There's vehicles. There's buildings. There's everything there.
How do you know that it's current?
The dust is rising. The vapor is rising.
But John, that stuff is not going to last for 13,000 years, Richard. John, it may not be dust.
Pardon?
It may not be dust.
There's a lot
of glass. There's shattered remnants of domes and structures, spires. By the way, the Treisnecker thing is only 10 miles high, not 60, okay? It's about the same height as the Cuban tower that you keep asking me about.
Yeah. This is vapor that's rising. There's at least six examples of vapor rising. It's not glass.
No, but glass looks like vapor under certain light scattering conditions.
Why would there be a triangular shaped piece of glass coming out of a tank? It's vapor. It's like the Lick Observatory picture that we'll get that was taken in 1946 that I showed you, and you said it was a artifact. It's not. It's smoke. It was an explosion.
The problem with Lick is you're looking with a relatively small telescope to the Earth's atmosphere, and I would trust nothing from Earth up until the recent CCD stuff because we just didn't have the resolution.
Earth looks pretty good to me.
Well, but looks good and numerical measurements of good are two different things, John. As you know, if you're flying on instruments, you got to trust your instruments, right?
Yes, you got to trust your instruments.
So in this case, you got to trust
telescope.
The numbers.
It comes down to numbers. Pardon?
It comes down to numbers. Let me go back to why I don't think there's a breathable atmosphere on the moon, okay?
Okay.
If you look at the moon, George, have you ever looked through a telescope of the moon?
All the time.
Okay. You notice how the moon is drifting about one diameter to the left, or actually in the telescope, mm-hmm. be upside down, it'd be to the right, every hour.
Yes.
It moves at about 2,000 miles an hour.
Right.
The moon is about 2,000 miles in diameter, so it moves its own diameter every hour in orbit around the Earth. Occasionally, it will move in front of a bright star. As it does, the star will wink out at one edge, and then about an hour later, depending upon where it crosses, it'll come back at the other side. It winks out really almost instantly. If there was an atmosphere over a quarter million miles, the star would twinkle violently for several seconds before it disappeared, because the atmosphere would be like the Earth's atmosphere, where if you look across the valley, I'm sitting here at roughly 6,500 feet tonight looking down on the Rio Grande Valley, and even only a few thousand feet up, you can see the street lights and the car lights twinkling because of the heat effects of the Earth's atmosphere.
Should it have weather?
Well, if it had an atmosphere that was dense enough to breathe, it would have weather. You would see clouds.
There's plenty of clouds in NASA photographs. And, you know, with all due respect, Richard, you know, you sound like the Flat Earth Society when they used to, you know, convince everybody the Earth is flat. Look, you walk 100 miles west, it's still flat. You walk 100 miles south, it's still flat. You can walk 1,000 miles to the north, and the Earth is still flat. Now, how can you tell me it's going to be a sphere? That's what it sounds like, Richard.
Because I take a space picture and it's a sphere. John, if you look at the numerical data, science is numbers. Ultimately, it comes down to numbers. The moon doesn't have an atmosphere because the stars don't twinkle when they go behind the edge.
No, that's an earthbound
scientific... No, it's physics anywhere in the universe. Atmospheric convection will cause twinkle.
I'll tell you what, let's settle this. Let's get a ride up there. I won't wear a spacesuit. You wear a spacesuit. We'll step out on the lunar atmosphere.
And see who's left.
I'll be able to breathe because the atmosphere is equivalent to 15,000 feet on Earth. The guys that live up there, they go through a 24-hour decompression, and, you know, they can breathe it fine if they're outside.
Let me ask
if they're in a dome, they don't have to have supplemental oxygen.
Let me ask another question, if you can answer it. And maybe you can answer it because of certain... Well, you'll see when I ask the question. What is your source on the lunar atmosphere?
Somebody who's been there.
Ah. So you're believing somebody who says they've been there.
Absolutely, positive.
Okay. See, I'm basing it on evidence that's democratic. Anybody can look at it. I don't have to trust anybody to tell me the truth. I just look at the numbers. I look at the pictures. I look at the lack of scintillation.
But you believe some of your sources, Richard?
No. What I do is I use my sources as early warning radar, like the dew line. When a source tells me something, I use that to then go and get hard evidence that actually I can independently corroborate. When I come on the show, except for certain political things where I definitely couch them as this is a political statement or a political thing, I am not giving you what someone has told me. I'm giving you the data that I have found that corroborates what someone told me.
That you interpret.
That I interpret because it stands still.
Okay, Richard, my data is Apollo 8-12, 2209. It shows what looks to be a spaceport. What do you think is there?
Well, I don't keep all these photos.
It's just one photo.
I know. Well,
don't forget, Richard, and this is coming from the guy who sees a face on Mars, right?
Let me go look at it. Is it one of the ones you sent Alex tonight?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, see, I haven't been to the site to be able to.
All right.
See
I tell you what, we're coming up on the break. We've got another half hour to go with Richard C. Hoagland and John Lear. Next hour, we're going to keep your phone calls going with John Lear. It's a fascinating discussion. We're going to talk more about structures on the moon. We're going to give Richard an opportunity to get up to the coasttocoastam.com website and take a look at the photograph that John just mentioned. And it's fascinating because Richard, you know, John has just questioned Richard to look at some of the structures that are on the moon right now. And, of course, you know Richard's theory. He sees a face on Mars, the one in Cydonia. So we'll be back. There's still another half hour to go with these two. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.